Hello, and welcome to a podcast from the EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference. You can find more podcasts like this by visiting connect.educause.edu/podcast or subscribe to our iTunes feed by searching for EDUCAUSE. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference. Participants include Anne Hill Doon, Associate Vice President and Associate CIO, Office of Information Technology, University of Minnesota, Linda A. Jorn, Director of the Office of Information Technology and Digital Media Center at the University of Minnesota, and Amy Whiteside, Research and Evaluation Consultant, OIT, Digital Media Center, University of Minnesota. The session is entitled, Teaching and Learning in Two New Smart Classrooms, Research Findings on the Pedagogical Implications of Space Design.
All right, welcome everyone. I was very excited to be part of this presentation as the convener. My name is Andrew Millen. I'm from Tidebreak. The University of Minnesota has a series of active learning classrooms they've implemented, and they've been taking a very structured approach to try and understand the impact of those kinds of rooms. And so our presenters today are going to talk to us a little bit about that, both in terms, I think, of the findings as well as the process. So without further ado, I'll leave it to our presenters.
University of Minnesota was honored to host the ELI Fall Focus Group session on revisiting learning spaces. We had a lot of fun hosting this session, and we gave people a tour of the active learning classrooms on our campus. And I want to acknowledge Steve Fitzgerald. Steve, I'll just have you stand up real quick. And Steve is the director of our Office of Classroom Management, and it is his team that designed and created these classrooms, and we've partnered with Steve, to evaluate teaching and learning activities in these classrooms. But when I reflected on some of the key themes at that focus group session, I came away with one big idea, and that's as we design learning spaces, we need to pair up. And by pairing up, I mean we really need to partner with people across, within our institution and outside our institution, and integrate the ideas that all of these experts bring. We need to work with learning scientists, construction managers, facilities people, capital planning, project management, students, and faculties. And there's a lot of rich discipline or professional knowledge in those areas, and we have to integrate that knowledge to successfully design innovative learning spaces. And we need to start doing some design thinking. And I've been reading lately in the last year about learning spaces, and this phrase design thinking is coming up. I know our moderator, Andrew, has written about design thinking. Tim Brown, who's the CEO of IDEO, has written about design thinking, really focusing on a user-centered methodology to design these spaces. And our users, or clients in this case, are our faculty and students. And we really need to engage them in the process of how they're using these spaces.
Now, when we think of smart learning configurations, active learning classrooms, and so on, the configuration we have here is not exactly that configuration, right? In rows and so on. The organization, however, of our presentation today focuses on these key questions. So to begin, what we're going to have you do is immediately transform this room into an active learning space. That is, you're going to at least turn around and meet someone new and pretend you're forming a round table, okay, with two or three other people. This whole first section over here, if you would please focus on question number one, in smaller groups, okay, at least find three people or so. Envision in your mind you're around a round table. Okay, second group, the second question. Third group, third question. You're going to have about 2 minutes to talk about that, and then go to question number four. Everyone should address that. You're going to have 3 minutes to do this exercise. Are you ready to transform? On your mark, get set, go. Okay, on your mark, get set, stop. Please. Okay, now, reporting back over here, this group number one, what are some key principles you use to design effective learning? Know your constituencies. Number two, what are the innovative ideas on your campus for learning spaces? Okay, formal and informal. What does it mean to not have a formal front of the room? Making it more collaborative, what we're trying to do here, okay? Third question, who are or should be our partners? Students, faculty, leverage the resources and support of those constituencies, facilities, people who have the money. I thought that was all of you. Okay, moving right along. Okay, what do you want to evaluate in these learning spaces? Results. Learning. Learner satisfaction. Okay, as we look at these, okay, the very first thing, we talked about principles, and we said know your audience and so on. Okay, I'm currently serving as Associate Vice President and so on. When I look at these and these efforts and so on, these are some of the guiding principles for us. Now, you could say that spells the word active. Now, you could say the A could be access, right, and so on. But when we think about this effort that we are sharing with you today, alignment with strategic goals of the institution. We have four pillars. We have four key goals for the University of Minnesota. One of them is exceptional students, as Steve said, the students. So aligning this effort with that. The C, communication. You could also say it's collaboration, but communication internally about what you're doing, communication externally, but transparency. So no surprises. What are we doing? Why are we doing it? And input for innovation. We talk about who are we asking to get that input to evaluate these and so on. What value are they adding? In the case of the University of Minnesota, you will see this University of Minnesota driven to discover on all of our slides. Okay, it's a critical value, the value of being a research mind, of saying, okay, what are we studying? What is the value that's adding? We're driven to discover new knowledge about these learning spaces. And the last, the E, is for evidence. Evidence-based decision-making. What we've learned from what we're sharing with you today, how are we going to put that in practice for the decisions of how we use those scarce resources in the future. We have a wireless infrastructure in support of many things here, and we know we have a variety of learning spaces. We know we're sharing with about our physical, but we know that in the many reports, for example, the recent ECAR bulletin on students and undergrads in information technology says that no matter how students think about IT resources, they are best situated in learning environments where technology is balanced with other learning activities, especially face-to-face interaction with faculty and with students in the classroom. And that's going to be a focus of our continued comments here.
I'm going to talk about the Digital Media Center, and I am the director of that unit. It's one unit in the Office of Information Technology. We have 36 full-time consultants in the unit. We have 750 people in the central OIT organization. And the mission of the Digital Media Center is to help faculty, students, and staff with the thoughtful application of technology in their day-to-day work, whether it's research, outreach, or teaching and learning. And we do this by providing this suite of services that you see up here. And I'm just going to focus in on the evaluation and research services. The DMC, as a unit, started in 1994. And over the years, we've had a robust faculty development programs where we work with faculty maybe over a week time period, maybe for 3 years, and we form learning communities. And we talk not only about the technology, how their roles are changing, what the learning outcomes are, how they can assess if students are meeting these learning outcomes, how technology helps with learning. And over the years, and we have grant programs, we're often asked to evaluate the effect effectiveness of using these technologies, or when we design new learning activities online or use digital technologies, what's the impact on learning? And over the years, we did an okay job at that, but we never did what we wanted to do, because to do research and evaluation, you need real expertise and you need people with the time to do that. And so over the years, 4 years ago, I was able to get funding for three full-time positions for researchers and evaluators. Amy Whiteside is one of our consultants. They all have their PhDs, one in philosophy, one in political science, and Amy's is in rhetorical theory and scientific and technical communications. And they all bring expertise around quantitative and qualitative research methodologies. And we provide services in research and evaluation in three tiers. And tiers one and two, the consultation and technical assistance, that's where the consultants are working with faculty more on a specific course or a program, whether it's an online program or they're redesigning a whole academic program. When they consult at Tier 1, it may be a two-hour meeting, and they have a lot of faculty on campus they work with. When they get to Level 2, the technical assistance is designing research tools, surveys, focus group questions, classroom observation tools. So they may design a few tools, and they may help the faculty analyze some data, and that may be more over a six-month period. But when we get to the Tier 3, we really call that a research partnership. And that's where the consultant will spend 50 to 60% of their time on one specific research project that's more at an institutional level. And this is where the project we're going to talk about today is at this Tier 3, and it's a partnership with the Office of Classroom Management. In the summer of 2007, Steve Fitzgerald, our director of the Office of Classroom Management, approached us to partner with him to evaluate the teaching and learning activities that are occurring in these newly designed active learning classrooms on our campus. And Amy will tell you a lot more about those classrooms. And so we started in the late summer, fall 07, we formed an active learning classrooms pilot evaluation team, which consisted of Steve and two of his colleagues, Jeremy, who designed these spaces, John, who supports faculty in the spaces, myself, Amy as a researcher, and Walker, who leads our evaluation and research services. And key was defining the scope of our research and then meeting every 2 weeks. And again, Amy will talk a little bit more. And with that, I'm going to let Amy tell you about the evaluation we've done in these classrooms.
Thank you, Linda. It is my great privilege to be the research fellow that really looks at these classrooms. And as you see up on the screen, these are two active learning classrooms that were constructed by the Office of Classroom Management in a pilot project. And one of the rooms seats 117 students, and the other, in a different city actually, on one of our campuses, seats 45 students. The features of these spaces, and I'm going to tell you about them quickly and then give you a chance to really see them through a four-minute video. Large tables that seat 9 students. Switchable laptop display on a large flat panel display screen, so students can display their work above the table. Fully loaded instructor panel that allows instructors to showcase the work of their students. So they can grab one screen from a student and multiply that around the room. They can showcase just one student's work, or they can populate the screen with other pertinent information that they'd like to. There are glass marker boards around the perimeter of the space. And I need to let you know that these rooms are constructed on a philosophy that students will bring their own devices into the classroom. The computer infrastructure does not come along with the space. For more information about the construction of these spaces and the philosophy behind them, I really encourage you to attend a poster session on Thursday with Steve Fitzgerald, Director of the Office of Classroom Management. That's Thursday at 4:55 in West Hall, WF34. And I want to give you a sense of these spaces right now in a quick 4-minute video that I think will really engage you and give you a real sense of these rooms.
My first thought was, wow, this is really cool. This isn't like any classroom I've ever had before.
When the students first walk into this classroom, it sends the message right away that this is not business as usual. You walk in and there are these beautiful round tables, and you instantly become part of a team, and you start to be responsible to one another in that team to bring what you've learned and to teach one another. There are connections at each table that allow you to have 3 computers at the large table. These computers are connected to a monitor that the table owns, and with just a tap of the button, one of the 3 different computers can be displayed on that.
This is my first class of the semester, and I was just blown away at this is what a college classroom could look like. The technology really enhanced it, I think, for me, because you could see what they're talking about up on the big screen. If you found something, you could show it to everyone else in the class.
If I see something interesting on one of these screens, I can send it to everybody's screen. And so we're able to do peer evaluation of one another's work right on the fly.
There was 8 of us at a table, and you were with them every day. And so by the end of the semester, you know, you were really close with those 8 people, and it was great for interacting with them.
I think the coursework we covered in this class was probably a little more challenging than in most classes, but the classroom definitely facilitated a much easier way to get everything done.
We call this a concept laboratory instead of a lecture, and I look at it as a place where students bring what they know, what they already know, what they've learned from the textbook, and they learn how to use that to build new ideas.
It was a lot more friendly and open in this classroom than a normal classroom, so it was a lot easier to ask your peers for help.
We all came into this classroom, we were mostly freshmen, didn't really know anybody, and by the end of the semester I felt like I knew the people at my table better than I knew anyone else.
That whole feeling that when you can walk into a science classroom and there's this immediate sense of community is quite special.
The professor can, you know, walk around and get to each table and make sure that they interact with all the students.
When here, I'd always be talking with the professor, asking questions, getting feedback right away.
I would come over and interact with small groups of students rather than trying to present some information to large groups of students. And it surprised me how easy that was to do. And how amazingly wonderful the students were. The kinds of solutions they came up with were astonishing. I mean, I was inspired and really awed by the quality of the conversations they were having. So I think it helped me really understand students in a much deeper, better way.
It was an amazing experience getting to know people, getting to use higher technology, using microphones, doing things that you're really not used to doing in a classroom setting. It just made it a much deeper learning experience.
One of the things that we asked you up front was to think about what you would want to evaluate from these spaces, and you came up with a few ideas in terms of results, learning, learner satisfaction came up, and these were some of the challenges that we faced as an active learning classroom pilot evaluation team. Our partnership came together, and we thought about what we really wanted to target. Because these spaces, as you can see, are so exciting. There are numerous things that we could look at. And we decided to focus on 4 key areas that you see. And these led us to specific research questions. And actually, these ended up being rather broad in scope, but it really gave us a lot of really great information. The first area we wanted to find out about was, what are faculty attitudes and expectations for the learning space as they start the semester? Do their attitudes and expectations change over the course of the semester? And are they fulfilled? We also wanted to know about student perceptions. How do students perceive these spaces? How are they comfortable in their new arrangements? How do the new spaces affect their relationships with their classmates, with their instructors? How are the technologies used, both from faculty and student perspectives? What teaching and learning strategies were used? And how did the room, the space, facilitate or inhibit those strategies? And finally, in what ways did the physical features such as seating, lighting, acoustics, ventilation, and power affect teaching and learning? To begin to target answering these questions, we focused on a number of different research methods. And for this iteration, we are under some time constraints, so we focused on more traditional methods, including instructor interviews, both before they taught the class and after. We looked at instructor and student surveys. We did classroom observations conducted over 30 from September 2007 to May 2008. And also conducted one student focus group to learn more, to answer more follow-up questions that we had from the surveys and other information that we attained. What do we find? Well, in terms of instructor perceptions, expectations, and attitudes, we learned that there was overall positive attitudes about these spaces. Instructors were very excited about the space. We found that there were a couple key points that we learned from the instructors. First of all, it really deepened the learning experience that they had. In an exit interview, one instructor talked about how teaching in a large lecture hall, and he called it the pit where he's in the bottom of the lecture hall, he'd often pass students that were in his class and not even realize it or know it because he didn't really know the students in his class. But in the active learning classroom, because there are tables of nine, he very quickly got to know his students on a very personal basis, and it really changed the relationship, changed the connection, and it changed the teaching and learning situation. Another instructor commented, "The main thing the room does, it changes the relationship that faculty have with students and the relationship that students have with each other." And the main comment that came through, and it was a positive comment from all instructors, is that their role shifted from being that lecturer in front of the class to being more of a facilitator. And one of you commented about what it means to not be teaching in front of the room, and that's what we learned very much so through this evaluation process. Of course, a few issues did arise in the course of the evaluation. We did learn that there were some user interface usability issues that came up in terms of instructors understanding how to use and control the panels on the fly while they're teaching. And what we found that, based on this finding, and this is the real strength of having an active learning classroom pilot evaluation team that met on a regular basis, what we found is that we could combat this issue by recommending in the next semester that all faculty who enter the space have a 10 to 15 minute orientation when they enter the space, and that their students are also a part of that orientation, particularly when they're graduate students in the class who will be teaching from the instructor panel. But it really doesn't matter. Every person in the space should really have an orientation and know how to use it. And that was implemented as soon as we could implement it. There were some expectations for computing devices in the room. Several instructors did expect, maybe because of the high-tech look, we're not entirely sure, that laptop computers came with the space. And again, we met in the committee, or we met in the evaluation pilot team meeting, and we thought about how to establish a short-term pilot laptop initiative. We put it into place as quickly as we could, and then we had long-term conversations about how we'll handle this interim time when students aren't bringing their devices on campus and how we can help instructors navigate this transitional time. And as part of that, we will be partnering with departments and colleges, as well as being a partnership between the Office of Classroom Management and the Office of Information Technology. All the instructors had a strong, and I cannot emphasize this enough, desire to stay in the space. One quote from an instructor, "I loved it. I can't imagine teaching in another space. It was a special, a wonderful class, a wonderful experience." And another instructor said, "I can't go back to teaching anywhere else." In answering the question about student perception in these new spaces, we conducted, as I mentioned, student surveys. And I want to give you the sense of the numbers so you can put it in context. We had 51 respondents for a 27.1% rate in the fall 2007. In spring 2008, we had a few more students, 117 out of 330 for a 35.4% response rate. Students felt connected to their instructors, and especially to their classmates. And it was really incredible to see the comments that came through in the surveys, because it was not students trying to get through the survey as quickly as they could. It was students really filling in some really qualitative information about their experience. 80% of the comments, and most students did write comments, related to what the room does, what the space does for teamwork, for collaboration. Here are a couple examples for you. During our MRSA project, we had to make a PowerPoint. We were able to project the PowerPoint upon the television and then all comment on it and fix the slides. The ability to project various computers up on the screen really helps everyone in a team contribute. During the lecture, our professor was able to show diagrams and information on the monitors, so everyone was able to easily visualize what we were learning. Also, we were able to control our monitors and show different pieces of our project to other team members on the monitor. And so, again, reinforcing how powerful these spaces are for teamwork. Students are very comfortable in this space. It came out to be 97% said they were very comfortable in this space. They mentioned it allows us to be able to be intimate in an intimate environment in such a big classroom. Remember, this one seats 117 students. And they talked about how they had incredibly favorable perceptions of the room. One student said, "I love this space. It makes me feel appreciated as a student, and I feel intellectually invigorated when I work and learn in it." So you're getting an idea of the first part of the question, which is how are the technologies used from faculty and student perceptions? And I want to get at the teaching and learning strategies, because I think that's probably what's on a lot of your minds, what really happens in these spaces. The video gives some indication of that, but a few key points that came out before I get to the examples were the room is designed for collaboration. So those of you who support faculty or who are faculty members, to come into a space where you don't have to think about rearranging it ahead of time is just really incredibly powerful. It saves them a lot of time and a lot of duress, and it helps them focus on teaching and learning instead of rearranging the space. They all found that the round tables were the key to the experience, but all talked about also how using all the affordances of the space in tandem really led to a deeper teaching and learning experience. So two quick examples, and these are from class observations that were conducted. First, in a biology class, used the glass marker boards to build a gene sequencing. Oh, thank you. So the students were building a gene, basically, and they had the three major components of the gene, and I come from a writing background, so forgive me. But the beautiful part about this in terms of teaching and learning is that all the way around the room, think about those 360-degree glass marker boards. There were genes up on the board, and there were marks here explaining this, and there were students talking with one another, learning from one another, consulting the instructor. And that's one example that I saw. Another, in a history of medicine course, involved telling a historical story using electronic archival documents that were displayed on the student display screens. So what had happened in this particular class is that each divided into subgroups. They were looking at a particular document. Maybe it was a report, a government document, or some letter or other correspondence. They analyzed it as a subgroup, Then all the three came together as a table of nine, as a team of nine, and talked about the larger scale significance about this disease or whatever it happens to be within history. The final question is about physical features, the sight lines, the seating, the lighting, and the ventilation. And what the data suggests within this particular question is that there was extremely high satisfaction in terms of the physical attributes. And when I say extremely high, if you combine the strongly agree and agree, we have well over 90% for each of these areas. A couple of things were noted in terms of more space for personal items, more plugins, and a few concerns about sight lines in the larger space. Again, the evaluation. Yes, sir.
What natural light?
It didn't come up in the space or in the data, and there was strong. I should say, first of all, the one space allows some light into the hallway. The other space doesn't have any natural light. But the students did not comment on that, and I think it may have to do with the lighting that is in the room. It's more of a natural bluer light, and it is a beautiful room, and you don't really notice that there isn't natural light. But if we had that space on campus, we would love to be using that natural light. First of all, I wanted to just indicate quickly that the evaluation team responded to the sight line issue right away. So those of you who are working in spaces that aren't perfect and that you need columns or pillars and you need to adjust to it, what we decided that we could do is to really upfront during our orientation with our faculty members to let them know upfront about this concern and to suggest that they might consider shifting teams mid-semester if that works within their teaching learning situation, or just physically spending some more time with tables that may not have a clear sight line to the instructor. Overall, we found that the rooms were largely well received by faculty. Over 85% of students recommended this room for every one of their other classes. Instructors interviewed expressed a strong desire to keep teaching in this space, and in some cases fear they really wanted to come back to this space. It deepened the relationships. When issues arose, we came together as a team and really worked at solving these problems as quickly and seamlessly as we could. And it just was an overall wonderful reception of the space. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Linda.
Just have a few comments. I hope in listening to Amy, these themes came up, a partnership, assessment, innovation, design thinking, integrating ideas from many areas. And we just wanted to end our talk about talking about how we're continuing this research and evaluation. And we are continuing our research of these active learning classrooms and a few other classes on our campus through some funding through a Bush Foundation grant. This is a Midwest grant agency. And the question we're looking at is, to what extent, if any, do formal and informal learning environments shape teaching and learning practices and student learning outcomes? And the one thing we're doing different as we can move our research forward is that we're working with undergraduate researchers. And so Amy has hired four undergraduate students and designed a two-day workshop to talk about evaluation and research. And we now have a team with a DMC consultant, an undergraduate student, and a faculty that are designing more specific research questions based on the class and the space they're teaching in. And we're using some innovative assessment techniques based off of some work that Gibson and Foster and Nixon have done, and having students go out and taking photos of where they sit down outside of class to learn and getting data. So we're continuing our research in this area. And with that, I think Amy's handing out some information. We have a little bit more information on that project. With that, we've got some hands raised, so let's start the questions. two questions. I'll answer the second one, and Steve, if you've got some thoughts on the first question. The second question about how does this maybe scale up to a large lecture of 300 students. And I can tell you that the biology professor, Robin, that you saw in the video, she has already asked for a classroom design like this that would handle 300 students. She feels she can teach in that environment. If you talk with Robin, and she has two instructors that help her co-teach, they just love this teaching, and they have just redesigned their whole curriculum out around this team-based approach to get their biology students to learn how to work in teams and value the team process when they go out to be professionals. So the teachers are feeling that they, if there was a larger room, they could teach in that. And Steve, do you want to address the issue of density? Because Steve manages all the centrally scheduled classrooms on our campus, 320 plus. So
the student density question is an issue. These classrooms are on the order of 24 approximate assignable square feet per student. So that is a question, but we have a tremendous diversity of central classrooms on the Twin Cities campus, and so this was a trade-off of quality of active, engaged student learning as a type of classroom, and the trade-off was it cost some density. I think the national, our benchmarking and national average is about 22, 24 in new classroom development. We have classrooms in the auditoriums that are down at 13. Most of our rooms are at the 16, 18 range.
Okay, the question of cost, and then how do we determine what classes?
These were pilot programs and expensive because we were, in fact, piloting a number of technology as well as facilities kinds of issues. The technology cost in the small classroom is on the order of $120,000, a little more than double that in the larger classroom. But as I say, these are pilots. So there's a lot of developmental cost that was in the front end. There's a lot of facilities cost. In addition to that, you saw the columns, and there was some comment about sight lines, and that's because these were renovated rooms, some of which had columns that we couldn't do anything about. The course selection, we are intentionally in the pilot rooms trying to get a diversity of classes in the classrooms, and frankly, now we have a lot more demand than we have supply of these rooms, but it's part of the normal course assignment process that classroom management does, and in these particular cases, we're asking the faculty and the students to participate in the evaluation process.
I would simply add that this has generated great interest, so not only in centrally scheduled classrooms or your labs and so on, the power of the round table, the power of just changing all of you into a different configuration immediately. So, I mean, there are many, many things that we're learning from this. Amy had mentioned someone over.
The question is, was there an issue in regard to students that maybe had their backs against the monitor? What I saw when I was observing classes is that students just moved their chairs so they weren't in that particular area. So I didn't see it. No one stayed with their back to the monitor. I can't think of one circumstance when that happened. And you're probably thinking a group of nine, well, that's a lot of students in a group. But really, I did not see any students with their back away from the monitor and not engaged in the process. I'm going to make a quick comment, and then I'm going to turn it over to Steve, who is really the mastermind behind the nine seats. I find that the tables themselves allow three laptops to be connected, so they allow the ability for groups of three, which are in more of the pedagogical literature is more of an optimal, and then they can come together as a group of nine. But I want to let Steve comment on that as well.
That's exactly right. It's three teams of three cascading up to one team of nine, cascading up to increasingly larger team engagement, so that at one point the entire room is engaged. At the other end of the spectrum, a team of three is engaged.
So the question is, what was happening in that space and were they intimidated? I think the first day was intimidating. And what happens is when they initially come for the tour and they see the space, they see only possibilities. In fact, I saw an instructor jump up and down with joy because she thought about all the opportunities that she could, how she could integrate this into her usability course. But on the first day, the reality of working with the controls and having this everything work the way that they think they should be, it takes about the first week for them to get used to it and feel comfortable in it. And that's one of the reasons why we felt it was really important to have that orientation on the first day of class and really let them play around and explore and have fun with the space and see it as empower them, let them see it as their space as the instructor as well as the student.
Two questions, one on the time frame from initial design to deployment, and the other, did the curriculum need to be redesigned? That was in part, I'll do the latter question. Because the College of Biological Sciences had really embraced our student learning outcomes, assessment of student learning outcomes, they had already worked to redesign the curriculum and so forth. So it lent itself for them to be ready to deploy and to work in this, to teach in this environment. And so we have that same type of effort then now continuing in all of our colleges and across our campuses.
The design process really was one that's been iterating over about a year and a half period, a lot of research. You'll see similarities here with the scale-up initiative at NC State and also TEAL at MIT. So over a year and a half period, we were researching, experimenting, and getting ready to do this, and it still continues today. It hasn't stopped. As I indicated earlier, the technology cost, which is really what you can isolate on, about $125,000 for the first room, and a little more than double that for the larger room. The facilities cost, because both of these were renovations, and we were also experimenting with facilities flexibility as a key design element in the rooms. Those were kind of one off costs, but I think the technology costs are accurate ones.
And then how you work in partnership, okay, with the Office of Information Technology, the network, and in support of it, and so on, when you think about the storage in the future for, video, for podcasting, et cetera. So we have these types of plans in the future. But we also, when we think as an institution and that alignment, I'm interested longitudinally, okay, what does this experience, what is the impact of this experience on our four-year graduation rate and so on, and how can we continue to deploy all of the things that we have learned of the best practices in this environment to all of our environments. But we need to close, and so we just thank you. Please come up and feel free to get materials from us.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Outsourced hosting of multi-format digital media content is available from Real's own CDN, the Real Broadcast Network. Information at rbn.com.